Spread Your Wings with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics. Hi, I'm Sabine.
And I'm Adam. Welcome to the sixth episode of Robots. Today's interviews focus on flying robots and competitions. We start with Christophe de Vecter, a member of the team working on the Delfly flapping wing robot. Not satisfied with simply announcing the Delfly Micro, the world's smallest camera-equipped flapping wing robot, the team also competed in this year's European Micro Air Vehicle, or EMAV, competition in Germany.
After Christophe, we join Peter Fersman, the chair of the EMAV competition and director of the Institute of Aerospace Systems at the Technical University of Braunschweig, to tell us a bit more about this year's competitors. But first, as always, let's hear the latest news from Christine.
Thanks, Sabine. A new toy robot called RED for Rapid Educational Development is rapidly gaining popularity in schools and nurseries across the UK. The 40-centimeter-high toy can help children as young as 3 learn to read. Among other things, the robot can read stories and quiz children on their ABCs. The University of London's Institute of Education seems quite taken, with the acting head of the institute saying that, when such a robot is well designed, it can actually be better at teaching than even the best teachers. Manufacturer Head Start is currently holding meetings at the UK's Qualification and Curriculum Authority in an attempt to win the government's backing for the robot. Following settlement of a lawsuit, iRobot is now selling a new negotiator robot. The iRobot Negotiator, which is based on a design allegedly stolen from iRobot by a former employee, is similar to the company's PackBot military robots. However, it's been stripped down to save costs, and instead of weaponry, it now only carries a camera. As the name suggests, the new robot is intended to be used by law enforcement agencies. At $20,000 apiece, the Negotiator is also much cheaper than the PackBot. Hansen Robotics' David Hansen, who some of our listeners may remember from an earlier Talking Robots interview, has teamed up with David Byrne, a founding member and the principal songwriter of the new wave band Talking Heads, to create a singing humanoid robot. While most roboticists try to create robots that are either convincingly human or convincingly artificial, Hansen and Byrne have set out to intentionally design a robot that's neither of the two. They're almost, but not quite, human-like robot, singing in Byrne's voice, is intended to help us understand precisely why artifacts at the boundary between robots and humans feel so uncanny. To read more about the new educational robot RED, to see iRobot's Negotiator in action, and to watch the uncanny robot sing, visit our forum at www.robotspodcast.com/forum.
Thank you, Christine. As you may have seen on our forum, or on any major technology news service for that matter, a Dutch group of researchers has just announced their latest creation, the Delfly Micro. This robot is the world's smallest camera-equipped flapping wing robot, weighing in at an amazingly minuscule 3 grams. Adam speaks with Christophe de Vecter, one of the main researchers of the team, about their latest contraption and the challenges they met in trying to imitate dragonflies.
Hi, Christophe. Welcome to the Robots Podcast.
Hello.
You're a member of the team working on the Delfly project. Can you tell us, tell our listeners a little bit about the project?
Well, Delfly is a project that started in 2005 as a student project during a design and synthesis exercise where they had to make a 15-gram flapping wing vehicle with onboard camera. Well, that group did pretty well, and they did so well that they won some prizes. And so the project was took up by the university and improved. And in 2006-2007, we have had Delfly 2, which is substantially smaller. And this year we even have a Delphi Micro, which has shrinked to an amazing 10 centimeter.
Wow, not bad.
Well, we've been working on it quite hard.
Definitely. So before we get into the specific Delphi's, maybe tell us about the motivation of the project. Why would you use a flapping wing instead of, say, just a propeller-based platform?
Well, there's a few reasons. For instance, once you get smaller and smaller aerial vehicles, it starts to be increasingly interesting to flap your wings. A fixed wing starts to get very inefficient, or even cannot fly anymore once you get to the size of a few millimeters. Rotary wings can keep up for a while, but once you get smaller, it gets interesting to flap. And there was some research done at the University of Delft together with the University of Wageningen, and basically we wanted to put that research into practice.
Okay. So hobbyists have been making model ornithopters for over 100 years, I guess. What makes yours different than what the hobbyists are doing?
To be completely honest, this project Delphi started with the most with the hobbyist versions. So that was a literature study, as a way to put it. So we started with looking around of all the other ornithopters that had been built, but there were, as far as we could find, no ornithopters that had electric propulsion. That weighed only 15 grams and even had a camera on board. So in that sense, Delphi was still, even Delphi 1 was already quite an achievement.
Tell us maybe a little bit about the scientific side then, why a university would be doing research in this. What's the advantage of having a camera on board, for example?
Well, if a vehicle is to be useful and be used in missions, you would have to carry sensors anyway. And one of the most interesting sensors, because humans also use it very prominently, is vision. If you can see from the vehicle's perspective, you suddenly can navigate away beyond line of sight, while if you're remote controlling it by looking at the vehicle from the ground, that of course poses severe limitations.
Okay, what other type of things can you do with the camera? Because I guess there's also hobbyist planes that they put a camera on top and you can see through goggles and you can pilot it from a distance. Do you plan on using the camera for some offboard computation for optic flow, for example?
We use a lot of computer vision on the images that we receive from the camera. First of all, to enhance their quality, but we even have a full computer control loop. So the images are sent from the vehicle to a ground station where the images are processed. And these can be used to actually control the vehicle autonomously. Not full autonomy, but there's many stages in autonomy. And one of the first thing we did on Delphi is, for instance, yaw rate stabilization. One could put a gyroscope on Delphi, but since we already have a camera on board because we want to have a camera, there's no need to put extra weight. We can use the camera images to compute the yaw rate, so the turn rate, and make an active control loop.
Okay. So what kind of level of autonomy would you say that you have right now on the Delphi 2, for example? Can you say it can't fly by itself, but it stabilizes its yaw? What other types of things can it do by itself?
We recently demonstrated some combination of algorithms, purely computer vision algorithms. So everything from the two cameras on board Delphi 2 to make it fly for 3 minutes fully autonomously. We had drawn a line on the ground which Delphi was able to detect and follow. So it was basically following a line autonomously based on camera images only for over 3 minutes. So that's already quite an achievement, because you need to stabilize every aspect of Delphi. It's not only navigation, but you also need to do the stabilization control based on images.
Okay, what is the next step then? Where do you hope to see the Delphi flying, for example, in a room all by itself, or are you still limited to just following a line?
Well, the algorithms for visually tracking lines are directly applicable to, for instance, flying through corridors. So there might be some interesting setups there. But of course, this is only a very limited level of autonomy. You would want to make it far more... you would want to use it in many more situations where you don't have lines. So we are also working on many, many other algorithms. For instance, learning algorithms. You fly Delphi for a while in a room until it starts to automatically recognize aspects of the room, so it knows when it's close to a wall or not. Mm-hmm. So there will be many more things that we can do with Delphi.
Okay, let's focus a little on the Delphi Micro. You recently had a press release just last week with this brand new platform that you presented. Can you explain a little, what is the Delphi Micro? How is it different than the Delphi 2? And why is it so special?
Well, to compare, I have to first start saying that Delphi 1 was about 21 grams and had a maximum dimension of about 50 centimeters. It could fly for sometimes up to 17 minutes, but had many problems with the motor getting hot and so on. So that's why we made Delphi 2. Delphi 2 was already quite a lot smaller, because it could fit in a sphere of 30 centimeter diameter. So it means the maximum span was a little below 28 centimeter. Delphi 2 already had a brushless motor. So that's a sensorless brushless motor that does not overheat and can fly for hours and hours without any problem. Mm-hmm. And now from this 30 centimeter sphere, we suddenly decreased the size to only 10 centimeter, and that is Delphi Micro. Instead of the 16 gram of Delphi 2, we now have a vehicle that is only 3 grams. And this 3 grams is the whole Delphi with its double pair of flapping wings, a full battery with enough energy to fly for 3 minutes, but not just flying. Within this energy, it also has energy left to make video images with its tiny 0.4-gram camera and transmit these images to the ground. So when we talk about Delphi Micro, it's 10 centimeter, 3 gram, and flying about 3 minutes with a camera on board.
That's quite impressive. What kind of challenges did you face downsizing the Delphi 2? I mean, the Delphi 2 was already pretty small. You must have faced some particular interesting challenges in making it even smaller.
Well, the funny thing is that there's almost no aspect of Delphi that was not challenging. If we had simultaneously to look at the aerodynamics that do change when you change the size. The construction is there's little hinges that are just almost impossible to make by hand. And I had some special techniques together with our partners to print hinges that are smaller than what you can make. The electronics, the remote control. I don't remember exactly the weight. I think it's about 0.1 gram remote control. We started with AM receivers that had terrible properties, but now we have a frequency hopping system in a single chip that was specially developed with these kind of vehicle in mind. The battery technology was a major issue. Probably one of the most astonishing results is the camera system. That's only 0.4 gram, including video transmitter, DC-DC power conversion, camera, lens, and antenna, and everything.
Wow.
So almost every aspect had needed really detailed analysis, and that was made possible thanks to the many years of good connections we have with the industry, especially mm-hmm. thanks to our senior researchers that have built up good relationships with many, many industrial companies.
So if you've already tackled all these challenges, what's the next step? Are you going to build a Delphi Nano?
We do have a plan to build a Delphi Nano. The current project plan, if everything goes well financially, is set to be ready in about 3 years. Might be a little more or less, but the challenge is to try to make a Delphi that's only 5 centimeters,
mm-hmm.
half of what is now. And it might not sound like a big decrease, but since we come from 50 and we are now at 10, but the step to 5 centimeters really imposes tremendous new challenges. Suddenly, you cannot talk about little motors anymore. You have to think of really new ideas on many aspects.
I'm not sure if you're familiar with Professor Robert Wood's work at the Harvard lab. They're also working on flapping wings at an even smaller size in several millimeters. I don't remember exactly. What do you think about their project?
Many projects around that have the technologies that we'll probably start to be interested in. But there's one difference, a major difference in approach between our way of working compared to most of the other researchers that are working on micro flapping wings. And one of our absolute requirements is that Delphi should always be able to fly a useful mission. So it should always be a finished product that is simultaneously controllable, that has enough energy to fly, and that can carry a sensor.
Mm-hmm.
We specifically only want to call something a Delphi when it's got a camera and it's controllable, so it can fly well. There's a few groups that have far better technology already on sub-aspects of flapping wing vehicles. But I think we have a quite good position in having tackled all the aspects of a vehicle that can fly a mission.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of missions, can you tell me what is the purpose of the Delphi? Do you have any applications? Have you used it anywhere yet?
We have only been demonstrating it in the press release once so far, and during the micro aerial vehicle competition this year, but it's not been used in a real mission scenario yet. The main purpose of Delphi is to do the research. You need to push the technologies so far, and once you've solved problems, then suddenly these technologies are extremely useful for bigger vehicles too. If you can reduce the weight of the electronics to such small weights, suddenly the larger vehicles can benefit from that too. So I would say the number one reason to work on Delphi micros is to push technology and push research. But on the other hand, once you start having little micro aerial vehicles that can really do a useful mission, that can fly into a building where people don't want to go into because there's too much danger, you can think of many applications where they could also be used commercially.
Do you have any plans to use the Delphi commercially to maybe in the next couple of years produce or have an offshoot that makes Delphi's?
We're certainly considering this option. I cannot say anything for certain at this moment.
Okay, because there was reports, I'm not sure if you heard, sometime last year, I think, about some dragonfly-type robots flying over a U.S. demonstration. I don't know if that was you guys or if that's just reports.
I can tell you that it was not our Delphi, mm-hmm. but it's not impossible.
I see. So maybe just as a more general question, what do you see for the future of the Delphi, other than the Delphi Nano, but maybe in the next 5 or 10 years?
I think there will be a simultaneous effort in getting the vehicle smaller and getting the micro aerial vehicles far more autonomous. I think this year was a special year in that it was the first demonstration during the European Micro Air Vehicle Competition to demonstrate indoor autonomy, which is apparently still quite a big challenge. While outdoors, there's many micro aerial vehicles that fly autonomously based on GPS and do waypoint tracking, so they can mm-hmm. perform a big mission almost fully autonomously. But indoor, it's still very challenging. There's not so many positioning sensors. And I think the next few years, you'll see an increase in the number of capabilities of indoor autonomous aerial vehicles. And I hope Delphi will be one of those.
Great. I hope to see the Delphi flying by itself sometime soon as well. Thank you very much for the interview, Christoph.
You're welcome.
And we hope to hear a lot from you in the future.
I sure hope so.
Thank you. Fourteen teams competing outdoors, 9 teams indoors, and participants from around the world, the EMAV conference this mid-July in Germany blew away yesterday's achievements in MAV maneuverability and autonomous flight. The chair of the competition, Peter Fuchsmann, talks with Sabine straight from his boat on vacation in Norway and gives us his insight on the state of the art in MAV systems, whether flapping, fixed wing, or rotary. As the director of the Institute of Aerospace Systems at the Technical University in Braunschweig in Germany, he also presents his own MAV systems and how they fit in the big MAV family.
Hi Peter, and welcome to Robots.
Hi Sabine, great talking to you.
Last month, you were the chair of the third edition of the EMAV flight competition, which featured many MAV teams from around the world, including the Delphi T, which we just interviewed. Can you tell us a bit more about this competition?
Yes, it's my pleasure. First of all, there were actually 2 competitions, an indoor competition and an outdoor competition. But both competitions had something in common. And that we divided the competitions up in 2 areas. One area is to improve the maneuverability, agility of micro aerial vehicles. In other words, in order to foster birds like flapping wings, you just talked about the Delphi team, for example. And the other competition was to challenge people flying autonomously. And the progress in the last years was that indoor as well as outdoor, we have seen quite a bit of improvement in autonomy. People are able to fly their aircraft just by laptops, for example, steering them with a waypoint control, etc. But maneuverability is still something, especially indoor and I might say outdoor as well, that is not so easy to do yet. I think that's why we had 2 wonderful different challenges.
So maybe you can explain the setup of this indoor and outdoor competition so we get an idea of what the competitors had to do.
Yeah, let's start indoor. The autonomy mission was you had to fly into a little house and identify the numbers, letters that were laid down up the wall, and fly in through a door and fly out a chimney. And I thought nobody would ever make it out of the chimney. But actually, there were three or four people who flew with the rotorcraft into the house, out of the chimney, land on top of the house, and then fly through two poles that had some crosswinds produced by a ventilator. And even some teams were able to achieve that. So that was the autonomy mission. And the agility maneuverability competition was that you were supposed to fly as fast as possible and as many times as possible between two poles, which were separated by about 5 meters. And there were even some people who were attempting that in an automatic mode. So that was the indoor part. Shall I continue about the outdoor part as well?
Sure.
Well, the outdoor part in autonomous mode was that you had to find behind a forest that was about 1 kilometer from the starting point a vehicle and identify the vehicle, come back, drop a ball in a specified zone and try to do a precision landing. The maneuverability area was that we set up three, let's say, arcs with balloons. So you had to fly under the balloon arc and try to do that automatically as many times as you can.
So these scenarios seem very application-oriented. What is the goal of this competition? Is it really to pull the teams towards application?
No, it's not application. It is also to really improve the basics in science. And just take when you fly through these arcs, for example, with the balloons, you have to find a way of precisely fly your aircraft. Either you have to identify the arcs by vision-based systems, optical flow systems, or you have to be able to really precisely identify your position with the help of satellite navigation, gyros, accelerometers, etc. And that with very tiny, very cheap sensors. So you have to do a lot of sensor modeling in order to be able to fly these very precise tracks. And that is not possible yet, always.
So these are really the challenges in autonomous flight. Are there any other challenges in autonomous flight?
Yes, I think the future, we let's have a look in the future. About 5 years looking backwards, first, the big challenge to keep an aircraft stable in the air of that size, you know, we're talking about 50 centimeters wingspan, maximum maybe 500 grams of weight. And therefore, now the challenge, that is done. Basic stable flight can be done automatically. But the big challenge now is also to sense obstacles, like the arc we just talked about, but it can be anything, and then avoid these obstacles automatically. So let's look at nature. You know, we have bats in nature who can fly without hitting trees, fly through the urban canyons. They can fly in adverse environments without hitting a tree or a wall, etc. And that's what we also want to do with micro-aerial vehicles. We want to fly them like bats without hitting anything. So that's not done yet. We want to do that in the future.
And so how did the teams perform in this outdoor autonomous scenario?
They performed extremely well. I was totally surprised by people who run quadrocopters, little flying vehicles that have four rotating four rotors, you know, just like a helicopter, a real helicopter, but they have four of them. That's why they're called quadrocopters, or even six of them. And they are really able to fly in weather conditions where you have some wind blowing, very stable, very precise. And I think that was the biggest advance in technology that I've seen over the last years.
So in this competition, there were flapping wing, fixed wing, quad rotors. Do you see any clear winner for the future, maybe?
No, because I always say everyone, and even Zeppelins, airships would have a place. It's a niche. The question is, for each one of them, the question is, what do you want to perform as a mission? Let's take the typical example, outdoor, just like in real life. If you want to fly 3-4 hours and want to perform a surveillance mission, meteorological surveillance mission over a long distance of 30, 40, 50 kilometers, that's not the task for a quad rotor because it doesn't have the transport capability. On the other hand, if you want to, fly in a local area and be in the air and, look at a certain scenario of people on the ground, for example, it's a much better mission for a quad rotor than for, a typical fixed-wing aircraft. Flapping-wing aircraft, just to give you an example, indoor, I think they are wonderful because, if they fly again, they can restart again, That's a much tougher question for a quadrocopter and even impossible for a fixed-wing aircraft inside. So each of these birds has its typical flight profile and mission scenario that it can complete. So there's a chance for every one of these.
For the future of the competition, will there be, first of all, a new edition in 2 years? And do you have any surprises?
There will be, I think, an edition in 2 years back in Braunschweig. And there will be one next year. And we have to decide, it's maybe either in the Netherlands or in Spain next year, I think.
I imagine that these EMAV competitions are really useful just to be able to communicate on the state-of-the-art of the hardware, of what's happening, of what works, etc. So I imagine that these competitions are really a good source of inspiration for most people making MAVs.
Yeah, looking back the last 5 years, I must really say we have become a big family, and especially for the students, it's wonderful because they can do real flight tests, In order to become a flight test engineer in Airbus or Boeing, you have to be in your profession for many, many, many years, and it's amazing. It's the same problems, the same mistakes you do, but you can do that with much less financial sources, of course, and you can do a theoretical work, and if somebody, wants to get a doctorate in my institute, I tell them, please show me that what you have thought of as an algorithm, it really flies, because then you deal with a lot of other problems. You have to cope with electromagnetic interference. You have to cope with, the real weather, etc. So that's why I see we are a big community, students, professors, but even industry is stepping in now because more and more it's becoming a market. So it's a meeting place for everyone.
Now maybe let's look a little bit into the work at the Institute of Aerospace Systems where you're the director.
Yeah.
So what type of research do you do on MAVs?
Well, we have two different areas. One is purely, science-driven. We developed one of the smallest and most powerful little autopilots, just weighing 25 grams, with a mission capability of flying tracks within 1 meter on curved tracks, and these have been so successful that we put them in a little bigger aircraft, let's say 2 meter wingspan. And I do a lot of meteorology work, flight meteorology work. So we actually equipped 3 planes for British Antarctic survey, and they're flying at the South Pole, at the South Pole, not Pool, sorry, South Pole. At the British Halley Station last year, collecting meteorological data. So we put turbulence sensors, pressure sensors, temperature sensors, humidity sensors on such a plane as well. So you can see we can open completely new areas for other scientific fields with micro-aerial vehicles, and that was possible by our precision autopilots that we have achieved. And my next step is two things in the area of science is improve the sense and avoid technology I talked about earlier, and the second one is my dream is that you fly such a micro aero vehicle like an aerobatic aircraft. In other words, you do have the precision and agility like the big aerobatic aircraft in real life, and that you can actually be very precise in the control in all axes.
Thank you, Peter, for taking time during your holidays in Norway to be with
My
us.
Pleasure. My pleasure. My pleasure.
That's it for today's episode of Robots. For more information on today's guests or flying robots, visit our website at www.robotspodcast.com. Our next show will air in 2 weeks, but in the meantime, stay in touch through our forum for the latest news and hot topics in robotics.
Thanks for listening. Hope to see you in 2 weeks.
Spread your wings with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics.